This is Brandon Satram, and you're listening to the Words of Redemption Podcast, Episode 2. And a happy Monday to everybody. This is Brandon Satram, author of the Words of Redemption blog at brandonsatram.com. And as I've already said, you're listening to the Words of Redemption podcast, episode 2. In this week's podcast, I plan to read the remainder, the conclusion of Until Durango, a short story that I wrote in February of this year and have continued working on and off over the last couple of months. So if you're listening to this episode and you haven't yet listened to episode 1 of this podcast, it would probably be a good idea to go back and listen to that. It's only about 10 minutes long, but I share the first, about third of Until Durango. And if it's been too long since you've listened to the first episode of the podcast as well, if you remember hearing the first episode of the podcast, but you can't remember for the life of you what in the world the first part of the story was about, in addition to that being kind of depressing to me as a writer, it would probably be a good idea for you to go back and listen to that, just so you kind of know where you are. Truthfully, when I recorded the first episode of this podcast, I didn't actually intend on reading the entire story. I was just going to read a third and then just kind of leave it at that and then hope that over time the story would get published and everybody that heard the podcast would have an opportunity to finish it and read the rest of it. However, I had a few impassioned appeals from friends and family and decided to go ahead and share the rest of the story. Before I do, I did want to share a little bit of an interesting story about this story and when I wrote it. When I first wrote the story in February, and you'll hear in the end sequence as things kind of pick up and as the story starts to get a little bit more intense, that there was a point in the story where I chose to use some lyrics from the song Epiphany from the musical Sweeney Todd. And hence, of course, as soon as you do that as a writer, you have to, and you want to get the story published, you have to deal with copyright issues. You have to kind of contact the copyright holder. I did so, actually, in an attempt to obtain a copyright so that I could get the story published, because I just couldn't, once I wrote it and I started going back through it, I couldn't bear the thought of not being able to have those lyrics in the song, in this story, because they just fit so perfectly. And as time's gone on, so that was about 4 months ago that I actually submitted for the copyright, and to this day I still actually have not heard back about whether or not I've gotten the copyright, which those of you that are listening that are writers and have dealt with this issue before, what people usually say about it is, if you have to use something that's copyrighted, unless you're Stephen King, don't bother. And I would totally agree with that. I've kind of reached the point now where I decided it's just not worth the hassle. If I can avoid using copyrighted material, I'm definitely going to avoid doing so. So that essentially left me with two options. I could either remove the references to the song lyrics, and all of that piece out of the story, or I could write my own musical-like song lyrics and insert those into the story and try to keep a similar theme, similar kind of idea in the words that I chose for that portion of the story. And I did decide to go ahead and write my own lyrics for that. So when you hear that portion of the story and you hear those musical lyrics, those were composed by yours truly. They are definitely not worthy of Broadway or Sweeney Todd. But I do think that they fit and they continue to kind of drive the story along. And I would definitely love to hear your feedback, not only on those song lyrics, but on the story itself. But I wanted to cover a couple of housekeeping items about the podcast itself before I jump into the remainder of the story. The first item is that the podcast is now up and available on the iTunes podcast directory. So you can go to that page. It will be a link on this podcast page and on my blog, where you can go to that page and submit a review about the podcast, which would be great. Of course, only do that if you're going to leave 4 or 5 stars. Negative reviews should stay on my blog. I also wanted to make an appeal before I finish reading the story that after you've heard the story, if you could go to my blog, to brandonsatram.com, and leave me a comment about the story itself. Of course, you can leave me comments about the podcast, but also what I really would love to hear are just your general impressions on the story, what you liked about it, what you didn't like about it. Please feel free to be honest. It's definitely something that I am still working on. My current plan with the story actually right now is to submit it to. I've identified a couple of different magazines that I want to submit it to, and we'll probably do so in the middle of June for one and then early July for the other. And so definitely over the next couple of weeks as I continue working on it, I'd love to hear your feedback on what works, what doesn't, what could be changed, and just get your general idea about the story itself. I won't be coming back after I'm done with the story. Just going to go ahead and end the podcast on that note. So I will see you next time. And enjoy the remainder of Until Durango. That order wasn't for me, Eric. It's for you. Reggie slid the plate across the dirty table. I'm willing to listen to what you have to say, and I expect to be entertained, or that meal right there will be your last. Eric stared and waited for Reggie to smile, but there was none. So he ate in silence while Reggie drank his coffee, knowing better than to attempt anything else. Reggie was serious. As he scarfed down the subpar omelet and bland toast, he thought about his current situation. 6 months ago, Reggie, Eric's boss and surrogate father, had told him never to call or come see him again. Eric respected his reasons, and he knew that coming here might cost him his life, but he was driven by desperation. He'd rather die here by Reggie's hand than see Jenny die by George O'Bannon's. More than an even trade, he thought. After finishing his meal, Eric cleared his throat. Reggie, who was currently staring at him over the rim of his porcelain coffee mug, returned the mug to the table and waited. "Look, Reggie," Eric said. "You know I'd never call you if it wasn't life or death, especially not after what happened. You gotta believe that." Reggie continued to stare, but didn't speak. "So obviously, this is a big deal. Look, I know I'm putting my life on the line just by sitting across this table from you. I never meant for things to turn out the way they did in Durango. You know..." His old boss slammed his fist against the table and rose several inches from his seat. The expression on his face morphed into anger in less than a second. One of the men at the rowdy table looked in their direction. He shifted his weight, moving one leg out of the booth, reached his hand into his coat, and waited. Eric realized he wasn't in such a public place after all. "Don't you ever mention Durango to me again, kid," Reggie said. His face was red, but no one else in the diner, other than the man now at the ready, seemed to mind or notice that Reggie had raised his voice. "You're hanging on by thread as it is. If you have any sense, you'll leave Durango and Isabella out of this." He stared, still very red, and slowly returned to the bench. Eric swallowed and gave himself a moment to regain his composure before continuing. "I'm sorry," he said. "That was stupid." Reggie didn't reply. After a minute of silence, Eric continued. "I need your help, Reggie. And I know that you or your friends in the booth over there could kill me where I sit before returning to your coffee. Trust me when I say that I know there's a better than average chance I don't even walk out of here tonight." Eric paused and held Reggie's gaze as long as he could stand to before continuing. "So maybe that gives you an idea of how desperate I am. I don't care whether I live or die, just that you help me. I don't know where else to turn, but Jenny needs my help and she needs it quick. And all I care about now is that she walks free again, even if it costs me my life. You could agree to help me, then put a bullet right between my eyes for all I care." Eric watched Reggie lean back from the table to study him. He knew Reggie was looking for fear or uncertainty in Eric. And Eric had plenty of both, but he'd managed to erase them from his face before walking into his diner. They were currently holding court in his stomach. "Jenny?" Reggie said, showing interest for the first time. "What's wrong with Jenny?" "O'Bannon has her." Reggie slammed his fist against the wall and spoke in harsh tones that betrayed his concern. "I told you 100 times never to go near that shark. How in the hell did you get mixed up with O'Bannon?" "It's a long story. And if you let me live, I'll tell you about it. All I can tell you right now is that he has Jenny, and I need 500 grand if I ever want to see her again." Reggie stared at Eric for almost a minute before replying. "Kid, you're crazy if you think I'm going to give you 500,000. I love Jenny like a daughter." He paused and looked away. "You know that. But there is no way I'm giving you that kind of money just so you can hand it over to my competition." "I know that. Come on, I'm not stupid. I don't want your money, Reggie." "Then what do you want?" I want your men to raid O'Bannon's place and get her back for me. Reggie sat in silence, and Eric hoped he was seriously considering his proposal. Reggie lifted the coffee mug to his lips and finished the remainder of the black liquid. He placed the empty mug on the table and began to turn it slowly on its base with his fingertips. Now why the hell would I do that? He paused, considering before his eyes widened. Have you actually seen O'Bannon? Eric laughed. No. We both know that no one knows what he really looks like. Even the feds couldn't pick him out of a lineup. But I do have information that will get you into his compound. And once in, I can tell you what you need to know about crippling his operation. All I need you to do is find Jenny and get her out of there before you torch the place. That's all you need, huh? Reggie asked, then paused. He was acting like the boss now. I can understand how you'd think I might see this isn't even trade, but assume for a moment that what you're offering isn't going to be good enough. What then? Eric swallowed. He'd known Reggie for many years. The two had shared a close bond before Durango, and Eric had always known that if you wanted to deal with the boss, you came with something in your back pocket. He opened his mouth to speak, just as one of the men at the lunch counter walked past, heading towards the bathroom. He waited, then spoke.
I know where Isabella is. With a speed that Eric had forgotten he was capable of, Reggie leapt across the table and pinned Eric to the pleather seat. Both hands gripped his shirt. Their faces were less than an inch apart before Reggie spoke. You told me Isabella fell from that cliff in Colorado. She's dead because of you, Eric. And because you couldn't listen and stay away like I told you to, you can plan on joining her shortly. Reggie's face was an inch from Eric's, and he could feel the heat of his coffee and whiskey-laden breath. Eric closed his eyes tight, then opened them and saw a deep red filling Reggie's face. Beyond the table, Eric heard the back and forth clicking sound of a gun being checked for a bullet in the chamber. He swallowed. Reggie, listen. She's not dead. Jenny tracked her down. She's talked to her. That's why O'Bannon has Jenny. I swear, kid, if you're lying, not lying, Reggie. Give me a chance to explain. Reggie's grip on Eric's collar loosened. He returned to his side of the booth, and Eric noticed that the two men at the rowdy table were now standing near them, guns drawn. Eric looked between them and saw that the women with them had vacated the diner, along with the two men at the lunch counter. The husband and wife continued to stare out of the window as though nothing was happening. The homeless man had begun singing show tunes to himself. Eric thought for a moment about a rumor he'd recently heard. He considered, then pushed it away as coincidence. This was his job, after all. She's still alive, you say, Reggie said. That's what Jenny told me. I trust her, and I know you do too. Reggie paused and stared at the wall, as if studying something on it. Okay, let's say I believe you. Why would O'Bannon want her? All due respect, Reggie, but look at yourself. You look like you haven't slept in weeks. I'd heard talk that you'd fallen off since Isabella died, but you look worse than I had thought. Reggie's men stepped forward, but he waved them off and motioned for Eric to continue. I mean that as a friend. From what I hear, O'Bannon's been quite pleased since Isabella died. He's been crushing you on the streets. Words that he was looking to shut you down before he heard rumors that she was still alive. Shut down my business, huh? From what I hear, Reggie, shut down you and your business. O'Bannon knows how tenacious you are, that it's just a matter of time before you shake this off and dive back in with a vengeance. And if I can be honest for a minute... Eric paused and looked around, as though there might be someone present he didn't want to hear what he was about to say. He turned back towards Reggie and continued, O'Bannon knows he can't take you at full strength. I think he's scared you'll rebound. Reggie pulled the silver flask back out of his coat and stared at the engraving. Eric continued, So now you know Isabella is alive, and you know that O'Bannon is looking to end this. Why not help me? Let's hit him hard before he hits you. Eric stopped and looked at his old mentor. The fatigue still showed heavily on his clothes and in the lines on his face, but his eyes looked brighter. He placed the flask back in his coat and looked up at his guards, as if expecting one of them to weigh in. Eric suspected they knew better. The boss made his decisions alone. He always had. In the meantime, Eric's heart pounded, almost keeping time with the homeless man singing. Presently, the man was repeating the same verse from a particularly dark song over and over again. He was drunk, and he was becoming more boisterous each time through. Death is coming. Oh, he's coming. Death is coming for you, friend. Death is coming. Oh, he's coming. Death is coming for you, friend. After several seconds, Reggie looked at Eric and spoke. "Okay, kid. Let's take O'Bannon out." He reached a slender hand across the table and waited for Eric to shake it. So predictable. As soon as the two men shook hands, gunfire erupted from the kitchen and Eric slid under the table. Someone was firing from behind the service counter at the two guards next to Reggie's table. The first bullet easily missed the man on Eric's left, while the second struck the other in the shoulder as he turned. He fell to one knee as the man on the left turned to face their attacker. The shooter emerged from the kitchen, and Eric recognized him as one of the stocky men who had been sitting at the lunch counter. He stepped out and took cover behind the counter, still firing on Reggie's remaining man. His first shot connected under the guard's right eye, and he buckled to the floor. As the men fell, Eric got a clear view of the couple that had been staring out the window, now moving into position. The man pulled a gun from his coat, while the woman threw down her flask and reached through a slit in her green dress, revealing a leg holster, an identical gun. With lightning-fast hands, she had her gun drawn and two shots off long before her husband had control of his firearm. The first shot, fired too early, struck a pie stand on the lunch counter, shattering it and the stale apple pie within. The second hit its mark just as the lunch counter gunman was coming up from cover. This was all playing out like Eric had been told it would, with one exception. The homeless man, now standing but facing away from all of them, was getting louder and louder, adding a cruel commentary to the gunfight with his song choice. "Death is coming. Oh, he's coming. Death is coming for you, friend. Write your family. Send a letter. There's no doubt you'll want their grief. Death is coming, quick and ragged, on the rails just till the end. You're on notice. Things in order. Death is coming like a thief." As the old man continued to carry on, Eric heard the door to the bathroom behind him slam open. Gunfire erupted from the dark hallway, and the guard who had been hit first in the shoulder was finished off with two bullets to the stomach. As he collapsed, the second stocky man from the lunch counter stepped out from the hallway and fired on the husband and wife. The husband was caught by surprise and couldn't even bring his gun around before he was cut down. The wife, whom the man underestimated by firing first on her husband, got off two shots that tore through the man's Armani suit at the same moment a single shot from his gun connected between her eyes. The fight was over. Only three men remained alive in the diner. Eric, who had shimmied down into the booth as far as he could go without lying down during the fight, sat up and looked across the table at Reggie. He was sitting in the same position he'd been in all night, still nursing his coffee and staring at the table. Still tough as nails, Eric wished things could be different. "I had a bad feeling about those two at the counter," Reggie said. "They looked like trouble from the moment they walked. Shut that bum up, will you, Eric?" The homeless man was still singing, and Eric found it funny that Reggie was issuing him orders as the rest of his team now lay dead on the floor. Part of the team again, just like that. "Hey," Eric yelled, "old man, shut up, will you?" The man turned and faced them, going silent for a moment. He looked at Eric, then at Reggie, and finally at the scene around him before waving his arms like a conductor and jumping back into song. "Death is coming, quick and ragged, on the rails just till the end. You're on notice. Things in order. Death is coming like a thief." "Drunk and harmless, kid," Reggie said. "Let's leave him be." Reggie was still staring at the man, but a large smile was forming on his face. He looked back at Eric and lowered his eyes to the table, where Eric now held a gun pointed in Reggie's direction. He sighed. "I guess I should have known you might be trouble, too." "O'Bannon has her, Reggie," Eric said. "And I'm doing what I have to get her back. It's nothing personal. You always treated me like a son." Eric paused. "Until Durango." "Until Durango," Reggie said, with softness unlike him. The brightness that had returned at the news of Isabella's being alive was gone. In its place was a resigned look that caused Eric's heart to wrench for his friend and mentor. He steeled himself. "Is Isabella really alive?" Reggie asked. "She sure is, Reggie. Your daughter is healthy, whole, and in one piece. She's been asking about her father. They're breaking the news to her now that he has sadly passed in the late-night diner shootout." Eric pulled the trigger and Reggie collapsed on the table. "Sorry, Reggie. Your life in exchange for Jenny's. That's what he promised." Eric stared with regret at Reggie. He really had been like a father to him. Even after the incident in Durango, he thought often about the man who'd rescued him from a difficult life. And now the boy he'd given life to became the man who'd taken his own from him. O'Bannon would love that irony. As the world beyond the end of his gun slipped back in, Eric's thoughts turned to the homeless man, his wild card. O'Bannon had told him that anyone in the diner who wasn't supposed to be there should be taken out. But Bums never went to the cops. What's more, the guy was obviously drunk. No one would believe a word he said. Eric turned to face the man, who had stopped singing at some point while Eric was focused on his target. The man walked towards Eric with a smile on his face. He suddenly looked sober and out of place in his disheveled clothes. Eric kept the gun on his lap as the man reached him and extended his hand. "Nice work, kid. George O'Bannon. Welcome to the family."